This week on the Friday edition, we play back the program Native Vedasque. Native News Online editor Levi Rickert welcomed Kayla Woody, a domestic violence prevention specialist at the House of Hope, to discuss the signs of stalking and how to get help.
January is National Stalking Month. And today we have with us a very special guest, and she works at the Citizens Band Potawatomi Nation in Shawnee, Oklahoma, Kayla Woody, a prevention specialist at Citizens Potawatomi Nation's House of Hope. And welcome, Kayla. Could you tell us a little about the House of Hope?
Yes, of course. I would love to. So the House of Hope is a domestic violence program with the Citizens Potawatomi Nation. We provide assistance to any individual who's experiencing domestic violence, stalking, or sexual violence. And what's really neat about our program is we do assist Native individuals, but because we're federally funded, we do get to also assist really anyone who's seeking, you know, services, seeking help in those different areas. And of course, all of our services are 100% free and 100% confidential. So we don't share any information to anyone like law enforcement or attorneys, counselors or doctors without that individual's permission.
Yes, and I know that stalking is a problem in Indian country. Do you have any national figures that you can share with us?
Yeah, we actually got some figures from a report that was done in 2016 from the National Institute of Justice, but it states that 49% of Native women will experience stalking in their lifetime. So that's going to be 1 in 2 Native women in their lifetime are going to experience those stalking behaviors, which is quite a bit higher than just the normal national average, where we see nationally 1 in 3 women will experience stalking. So we definitely see that it's much more prevalent in Native, individuals.
Yes. Now, I understand that it's not just a situation. Stalking doesn't just happen just to women, that you've had to deal with situations where men have come to see you and say they're being stalked.
Yeah, stalking doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter your gender, your economic status, your race, your ethnicity, even your sexual orientation. Stalking can happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. We actually see that, like I said, 1 in 3 women nationally experience stalking, but we see that 1 in 6 men nationally experience stalking. And of course, our Native communities experience that at a much higher rate. But we see other communities like the LGBTQ communities that are also starting, we're starting to get more research on that and see that, they're starting to see pretty high rates of stalking. So we are seeing it everywhere, unfortunately.
Yes, that's sad. And can you define stalking before we get too far into this? Because some people may have experienced stalking, just don't realize it. And we know that's inappropriate behavior. But Kayla, tell us your definition, how your program defines stalking.
Yeah, of course. I know stalking is kind of one of those terms that people do when they hear it, they don't quite understand what it means. They only really hear it from media, from pop culture, but we understand stalking to be a pattern of behaviors that's directed towards one specific person that would actually cause any reasonable person to feel fear. And we kind of break that down when we talk about stalking. Again, it's a pattern of behavior. So it's not something that just happens one time. We see it happening over time, multiple times. And the second part of that definition is it's directed towards a specific person. So it's not happening to a group of people. Now it can happen to individuals who are close to that specific person, like family members or coworkers, But normally those behaviors are directed at family members or coworkers to get back at that specific person. Mm-hmm. And then the last part of that definition is those behaviors would cause any reasonable person to feel fear. So it's not just going to cause that victim of stalking to feel fear, but it's really going to cause anyone like you or me, if we were in that situation, to be fearful in that moment.
Mm-hmm. And it can happen in person, through phone calls. And tell us about internet usage, like maybe social media and messaging, those types of things.
Yes, we are seeing an extreme increase in digital stalking. And it's because of the age that we live in right now. We do everything digitally. But we are seeing cases of individuals using digital devices and electronic devices to track, you know, that person that they're trying to stalk, whether they use the Apple AirTags. We've heard of individuals purchasing pet trackers and putting in purses and vehicles in their children's backpacks. We've of course seen stalking take place on social media platforms. We see devices put on phones. There's a lot of new ways that are used to be able to either track or pursue that specific individual digitally.
And what advice would you have for parents or guardians to help prevent stalking to minors who may be completely oblivious, not really top of awareness to them, but often you do read about, and I hear about cases of, mm-hmm. of people who have been stalked to minors, and the kids really don't even know what's going on. So what advice would you give to parents and guardians?
Yeah, so I think the best thing that we can do as parents is to educate our children. Sit down and talk with them about what healthy relationships look like, because the majority of individuals who are stalked by either a former or current intimate partner. Most of the time, if an individual is being stalked, it's by somebody that they know. So we have to educate our children on what's healthy, what we should be teaching them about expectations when it comes to relationships and boundaries. Talking to them about red flags. We actually have some really great resources on our website at cpnhouseofhope.com. But we also talk about resources like loveisrespect.com and stronghearts.com. That's a native website. But there's all kinds of lists of red flags to look out for, you know, like isolation and guilting and intimidation and just those kind of different things that really stick out, because we see a correlation between domestic violence or dating violence and stalking. And then, of course, once you've had those conversations with your teens about, you know, what they should expect in a relationship and what a healthy relationship looks like, teaching them about, you know, the different types of behaviors with stalking and just kind of what to look out for. And I think another great thing is to just find a safe adult. If they have something that just doesn't sit right with them or makes them uncomfortable, reaching out to someone that's, you know, that they feel safe with, that's going to step up and help them, you know, in that situation, not trying to take care of it all by themselves. I think that's some of the best advice I wish that, you know, my parents would have thought about when I was younger, you know, just sitting down and having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's almost generational, but I used to hear, don't talk to strangers, but
yeah,
which is still very true. But I think it, especially in the age of the digital stalking, I think it's very incumbent on parents to really, really be real prudent and really, and even check their phones, check their devices, tablets, to find out who they're communicating with. So,
And I think it's important to explain to your, you know, your child, you know, I'm not checking your device because I'm trying to take away your privacy. Mm-hmm. I'm checking your device because there are predators in the world. And I want to make sure that I'm keeping you safe. And explaining to you, to them as you're checking it, like, you know, things like this, seeing things on social media and saying, you know, this is unhealthy, or, you know, showing them articles. I think we can learn a lot from the things that kind of take place in our communities, and being able to explain, you know, if maybe their parents would have educated them or talked to them, this situation would have turned out differently. So, mm-hmm. you know, just trying to use that to your advantage.
And Kayla, you know that there's a big significant problem in across Indian country with the missing and murdered indigenous people. And it's there again, it's kind of has transitioned from the W into the P, but
yeah.
What correlation do you see, or could there be, between the MMIP problem and stalking? I mean, stalking is very seemingly minor, but it could really lead to something. Is that correct?
Yes. That's something that we see with stalking. A lot of people, when they think about stalking, they think of it as something minor. They don't see it as a crime. They think it's kind of irrelevant. And, you know, as an individual who is really diving deep into stalking and understanding it, when I think of stalking, it terrifies me, because mm-hmm. The majority of individuals that are stalked, because it's a pattern of behavior, those behaviors over time are going to intensify. And because stalking is surrounded, you know, around power and control, that power and control is an addiction to that stalker, to that abuser. So they're going to want to get more power and more control over time. And those behaviors that they're using are going to intensify until those behaviors turn physical and violent. And the majority of the time, if the stalking is not taken seriously and measures are not taken to hold that stalker accountable, you know, unfortunately, we see that these victims are being murdered. A lot of times the stalker taking their own life afterwards. It can turn violent quickly. It can, you know, the lethality of stalking is very high. So we take that very seriously. And when we have an individual come to us with those, we really try to safety plan and make sure that we're getting them out of that situation as quickly as we can.
And you mentioned that so often people who have been accused of, or maybe even arrested for stalking, are people, individuals that people have known, that they know them, or they may have even been in a relationship with them. And what are some of the red flags? What do you counsel your people that come to see you, your patients or clients is the word I'm looking for?
We just try to go over those different behaviors that a lot of times, like I said, those individuals may not see that as an unhealthy behavior or a stalking behavior. We talk about the unwanted gifts, the unwanted communication. A lot of times there's threats with stalking, either threatening the individual or threatening their family, their children, their pets. There's the following, the surveillance. We see behaviors like trespassing, vandalism. We even see behaviors that most people don't look at as stalking that include, sharing information, private information that you wouldn't want shared, like photos or things like that. Showing up and I think I said, like, vandalizing your property. Most people don't think about that as stalking. Or even going on social media and spreading rumors about you. That can be considered as stalking, trying to discredit you as a person. So a lot of those behaviors most people don't think of as stalking. when we see stalking, we think about what we've seen on TV, a person, you know, kind of lurking in the dark, mm-hmm. You know, hiding behind something. But that's not always the case. A lot of times a stalker wants you to know they're there. Mm. They're going to make themselves clear and noticeable. So just trying to explain those different behaviors to them and really showing just the different statistics about how it's not just them experiencing it. You know, they're not alone in this situation. Other people experience this every single day. We try to use, you know, when we're talking to individuals, we try to use our own personal experiences to let them know, you know, you're not alone in this. And you don't have to continue to deal with these behaviors. There are steps that you can take to stay safe and get out of this situation.
At what point should clients involve law enforcement?
We really try to leave that up to the client. Because unfortunately, like I've said before, stalking is about power and control. And as a victim, if you have lost power and control from that individual, that perpetrator, the last thing you want me as an advocate doing is telling you what to do. You need to go call law enforcement. You need to file mm-hmm. for a protective order. We don't want to push them into anything they're uncomfortable with. And a lot of times
it comes down to the comfort level. I like what you just said. Yes. Okay.
And a lot of times they know that stalker and they know, how they're going to react and they are used to, those behaviors and how that person's going to respond. We don't know that person. We don't know how they're going to respond. So we really leave that up to them. If they want to contact law enforcement, we encourage it. Mm-hmm. It's really good to have a police report on file because if you have a paper trail, it's going to be a lot easier to, you know, to prosecute in a court of law. Without that paper trail, it's really just their word against the stalker.
Well, I have a question as it relates to the court system. You're in Oklahoma in the citizens mm-hmm. band. Do they have a tribal court? Does it go to tribal court or does it go to the other court?
It's a really particular situation. Okay. I, of course, am not an attorney or a legal representation. I'm still kind of learning all of those. Mm-hmm. I would say that as a tribal individual who is experiencing those type of behaviors, you know, it really depends on if that perpetrator is tribal or not.
Okay.
And it may be easier to go to the state level sometimes if the perpetrator is not tribal. But we really leave it up to the individual. If they want to go to tribal court, we will support them in that. Or if they would rather go to, you know, a state court, we'll support them as well. You can file a Native individual can file a protective order either through tribal court or, you know, through the state court. There's kind of some different guidelines around that now that we have some new things coming in. But again, we really just try to do what the individual and the victim would like to do. And what's wonderful about our services is we provide court advocacy. So we will go with them to that hearing mm-hmm. so they're not having to go by themselves and face that that perpetrator, that stalker, because that can be terrifying. So we will go with them and support them in that. If, you know, whether they're wanting to file a protective order or they're wanting to file charges, whatever the case may be.
Now in Oklahoma, and I know with the McGirt case that was settled by the Supreme Court, of course, there was an updated version of the Castro case last year. And I'm not an attorney as well, so I don't want to get too deep into the legal side of it. But are there stalking laws in Oklahoma? Have they intensified in the last few years? Does the tribe have stalking laws or ordinances?
So what's really interesting is every state, all 50 states and the District of Columbia, all see stalking as a crime. So they're all punishable. All states, of course, are different, and all tribes are different when it comes to those laws. Now, the state of Oklahoma, just last year in 2022, did increase those laws, which benefits victims of stalking. So before that, you know, a first offense of stalking would immediately, you know, be a misdemeanor. And then after that would be a felony. But after these laws were passed last year, that first offense can now be considered a felony. So that's definitely a benefit for the victim because it's going to hold a higher charge, which, you know, is going to decrease, hopefully, that behavior going forward. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, stalking is really underreported because it is difficult to get charges on. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain to someone what's happening to you. Mm-hmm. Especially if that person that you're going to for help doesn't understand the context of the situation. And stalking, when we talk about stalking, context is key. If you do not understand the context around, you know, what's happening, then those behaviors may not look, you know, scary to you. Mm-hmm. You know, for an individual who is being stalked, who is experiencing those behaviors in that pattern over and over and over, they see those, you know, behaviors as terrifying and as harassing. But, you know, to someone on the outside, they're only going to see, you know, that gift that was sent to the office. Oh, you got flowers. How awesome. When really the person who receives the flowers, it might be a warning. It might tell that individual, I know where you're at. You tried to run away, but I found you. Mm-hmm. That can be terrifying. So trying to explain that to someone who just doesn't understand the situation, it's going to make it difficult to see that as fear. And really that's what they have to prove in court. That the fear factor is there.
Mm-hmm. In your experience, has law enforcement been helpful to people who've been stalked, or are they not necessarily believing the victim at that point?
I've seen it go both ways. Okay. I have seen some law enforcement that are wonderfully trained in stalking. We actually just held a training last January for our law enforcement in the community. We had tribal officers come. We had sheriff's department come. We had, you know, city of Shawnee, our city police department show up, light force show up. It was a fantastic training, and we were able to give them some really great information that I think that they're going to be able to apply. But you know, it's not mandatory for law enforcement to take those trainings. So if they are not trained on what stalking is and what those behaviors look like, it might be difficult for them, to provide, you know, the help and the assistance that that victim may need in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kayla, thank you so much, Chimigwich, for coming on Native Adashka today. And to our viewers, January is National Stalking Awareness Month, and we felt it would be helpful to have Kayla come on and present what her great program is doing out there at the Citizen Band Potawatomi Nation in Shawnee, Oklahoma. So, Chimigwich to you, Kayla.
Thank you so much, Levi.
You can find links to Native Vidasque on the Native News Online website. That's nativenewsonline.net. The Friday edition is a public affairs presentation of KIDE Huva Tribal Radio. We thank you for listening.